Good morning, everyone. Today is Thursday, February 11th. I'm opening a meeting of the House Energy and Environment Committee. We're going to start off with our public hearing today on House Bill 4101 on carbon. Maybe we aren't. This is the House Bill 4101. This is the carbon metrics program from Representative Bence. Representative Bence, do you want to tell us a little bit about this bill, please?
First of all, thank you, Madam Chair. Cliff Bence, District 60. The concept of the bill is familiar to everyone because this is the second session in which I brought the bill. It's still not ready, and my hope is that over the next year we'll all make some more progress in this necessary effort. The challenge of measuring how well our programs and policies do in reducing CO2 is considerable, and I won't bore you with some of the different runs we've taken at this, other than to say that I really appreciated the help of Palmer Mason from DEQ in trying to work our way through how best to measure some of these things. The black carbon efforts made under HB 4034 illustrate, I think, one part of what we need to be doing, and I would hope we could incorporate that into these efforts over the next year. But that's just one small part of a much bigger challenge, which is to figure out how well some of our programs are doing so we can do a better job of prioritizing the use of our limited funds. The need to do something is never really debated. We all agree we need to do something. The question is what and how do we measure the value of that which we're doing. I would like to say it's simple. It really truly is not, and this bill does not reflect in any way the type of complexity that ultimately will be in the bill, which is unfortunate but necessary. So thank you for giving me this opportunity, and hopefully next year we'll be actually able to present something that's worthy of consideration.
Thank you. Is there questions for Representative Bence? I have one. I mean, I know that you've been working on this for a while, and I've had a lot of discussions with you about it. And I'm interested in the cost aspect, too, but I'm also interested in looking at and finding some good numbers on the avoided costs of policies as well. And so that's just a suggestion that I have as you look forward how to add changes to the bill in the future.
I'm happy to do that, I'm sure. I will just say that each time we add something to it, the challenge becomes greater.
Yeah.
So what we were trying to do here is to make it as narrow as we possibly could to actually get something. And I think Representative Helm encountered the same difficulty in his bill, because once you get started down this road, it's a long one. So,
yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much. All right. There's nobody signed up. Okay. Thank you. And with that, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 4101. And I will open a work session on House Bill 4125. We do have a -4 amendment for that bill. There were a couple other ones, but the one that I want to discuss is the -4 amendment for that bill. And I believe we have Angela Crowley Cook here to talk a little bit about that.
Chair Vega Peterson, members of the committee, Angela Crowley Cook, Oregon Environmental Council. Thank you for hearing this bill and discussing this amendment today. So the -4 amendment is technical corrections to the -1 amendment. Some of them are pretty substantial, but they were inadvertently left out of the -1. So I'll just review those really quickly. And these are all part of the agreement that we worked out with the Landlord-Tenant Coalition. So the first one is mobile home parks were not intended to be included in this, and so the -4 excludes them. The second change is there's a penalty for if landlords don't share the results of the tests with tenants. And there's an issue that still needs to be fixed in the -4 that we might have to work on in Ways and Means. And that's how the violation of any part of the bill is treated under the habitability section of landlord-tenant law. The intent was if the landlord does not share the results of the test with the tenants, there would be a penalty, a standard penalty that there are for other things in landlord-tenant law. But if the water was not treated, that's the violation of the habitability standard. And that's something that we don't think is still quite correct. So I'm working with a landlord-tenant coalition to try and figure that out for the next iteration. Hopefully the last one. And then the next change, the Dash 1 amendments didn't clarify what to do about existing tenants and sharing the test results with them. So it makes clear in the Dash 4 that 60 days after the operative date of the testing, which would be March 1st of next year, is when the test results have to be conducted, and then they have to be shared within 30 days after that for existing tenants. And then in the Dash 1, it had had language for new tenants already. One other change was the use of the word unacceptable levels of nitrate in the Dash 1s, which should have just been any level of nitrate. That was a publication error that was fixed in this draft. And that's it. I think that's it.
Okay. Thank you. Questions? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Angela. Do we have any idea how many potential sources of water, i.e. wells and or landlords, would be impacted by this?
Do you, Representative Johnson? Oh, Chair Vega Peterson, Representative Johnson, I do, but not at the tip of my fingers, so I can send that to you later.
Dozens?
Chair Vega Peterson, Representative Johnson, I believe it's in the tens of thousands, but I'd have to double check. There's over 100, I want to say it's between 100,000 and 300,000 people that are renters that use well water, is our estimation.
300,000.
So I'll have to get back to you, though, with our exact numbers. And I realize I forgot to say one other thing on the record, which is that while the language is correct in the Dash 4, we wanted to make clear that the landlord can not only come to an agreement with the tenant to take the collection of the water sample, but can also delegate that responsibility to a third party, a contractor or the maintenance person or something like that. So that's, it's not spelled out in law, but it would be allowed the way the law, language is currently written.
Representative White.
Just wondering if that's something that we shouldn't consider us billing out a trained third party for doing this, because if you mishandle the bottle or anything, you could actually introduce contaminants that really aren't in the water, just because we have naturally occurring E. coli in our hands or things like that if we don't handle the units correctly. So we could get a lot of false positives possibly with the way this is drawn out now. Would that be correct?
Chair Vega Peterson, Representative Widener. So in the Dash 4 amendments, it spells out how the samples are to be collected, and that's in accordance with existing rules that the Oregon Health Authority has written. And so the Oregon Health Authority does have guidelines for collecting samples to avoid exactly the kind of contamination that you're talking about. So those guidelines would have to be followed no matter who collected the sample, and so I believe that's already covered in the Dash 4.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Representative Reuter.
Chair Vega Peterson, I move to adopt the Dash 4 amendments dated 2-10-16.
Representative Reuter moves to adopt the Dash 4 amendments dated 2-10-16. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? If none, the amendments are adopted.
Chair Vega Peterson, I move House Bill 4125 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Representative Reuter moves House Bill 4125 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Representative Benz.
Well, Chair, I'll be a no on this, and it's not because lack of effort. I'll tell you, there's been enormous amounts of work put in on this bill. At the end of the day, we all want people to have clean water and safe water. The challenge here is making sure that we get this right so that we don't have folks being obligated to do certain things that then don't happen, and then the ultimate consequences aren't as we hope they would be. The bill is I've worked on it now for, I think, 2 years, and
had hopes that I would be able to support it throughout. It still needs more work, and I know that people are becoming impatient, but if we're going to have a system that actually results in what people are trying to get done, the bill needs more work, so I'll be a no.
Thank you. Sam Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to be a yes on this, but again, I think there's some additional work that needs to be done, and I'm hopeful that if it goes down, it'll go to Ways and Means?
Yes.
Okay. There still are opportunities. It sounds like there's still some uncertainties, and hopefully when it comes back and we have a chance to consider it on the floor, I can change my mind.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Widener.
Madam Chair, I'll be a no on it as well, just because when it gets into sampling, I actually have a well myself, so and have actually had a well most of my life in different places where I've lived. And you do take the samples and everything and have had false positives come back just from the way I've tested and things like that. And I'd like to see us looking more at it. If you take a sample and you find something there, then yes, we need to start checking on a regular basis. But if the sample comes back clean, then from that initial one, it should be like every 5 years or something like that if you're going to be renting the property, because it gets expensive doing the samples. I usually incur a cost of about $300 every time that I run a sample, and that adds up, which makes more cost for the landlord, tenants, and everybody. So I will be a no.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Representative Hurd.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, it's the same with me. I've been on a well actually my whole life up until just the last couple of years here. So this issue is very important to me, that people have clean drinking water, especially children, as they're developing through life. So I will be a no today, but I'm hoping that it'll get the changes necessary as we're talked about so I can get to a yes on the floor.
Okay, thank you. Representative Holby.
Madam Chair, I will be a yes on this bill. I grew up on a well, too, and it wasn't until much later we found out we had arsenic in it, so I'm waiting for the impacts of that to hit me, or maybe they already have. So,
I think you might have swayed me almost to a yes for that.
Any further discussion? All right. If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Benz?
No.
Representative Boone?
Aye.
Representative Hurd? No. Representative
Collins? Aye.
Representative Colby?
Aye.
Representative Widener?
No.
Vice Chair Johnson?
No.
Vice Chair Reardon?
Aye.
Chair Megan Peterson?
Aye. The motion passes and the bill is sent as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means. All right. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 4036. Colleagues, today we will be looking at the Dash 32 amendments. And I can talk a little bit about those. So the Dash 32 amendments were
broad enough to actually do something.
Are kind of a, for the most part, contain a lot of the things that were in the Dash 31 amendments that we had available on Tuesday, but it fixes some of the things specifically around the EV piece. There was a couple lines that were inadvertently taken out that were put back in. It also lowers the low-income carve-out in the community solar piece to 10% from 15%. And it also adopts more of the language from the PUC's recommendations, both in terms of the reliability of the overall program for the RPS piece and in the community solar piece.
Chair Vega Peterson, I move to adopt the Dash 32 amendments dated 2/9/2016.
Okay, Rep. Reardon moves to adopt the Dash 32 amendments dated 2/9/2016. Is there any discussion? Representative Colby.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I really appreciate the effort you've gone through, and Dash 32 is definitely made me a bit more comfortable. But I still have some outstanding issues, and I will be a courtesy yes.
Okay, thank you. Any further discussion? Okay, is there any objection? If not, the amendments are adopted.
Chair Vega Peterson, I move House Bill 4036 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded.
Representative Reardon moves House Bill 4036 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded. Is there any discussion? Representative Benz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be a no, but this bill reflects so many interesting things. It's hard to know where to start in discussing it. So let me say a couple of things. First, the complexity of this area is really truly amazing, and So recognizing that, I enlisted the assistance of a number of people that actually do this for a living to try to figure out what this bill really did. Because we all need to know, it's a 25-year commitment. Some would say 23, but I think longer. It's a multi-billion dollar bill. It's being passed in under the threat of something worse. If that's something worse or not would require and has involved a great deal of discussion. I'll tell you what bothers me the most about it, and this is based upon the analysis that's been provided to me by various utility specialists. And the first thing is the single issue rate making element that's in the bill. Now, why do I bring this up first? I bring it up because I have been surprised that many of the issues that were raised by these specialists were not raised in these committee hearings. And I actually think the better word would be disappointed. This is a big deal. This is a commitment by our ratepayers to a lot of money over a lot of years. And we deserve, this group up here, absolute candor. I don't think we've gotten it. And that's not good. That's bad. And so it's bad because when we're making these kinds of decisions that are so important to our state, they need to be done with absolute clarity in why things are happening. And we haven't had that here. That's not good. That's bad. Reflects badly on the process. I've watched and been involved in my law practice, this area of law. And it's extremely complicated. It's filled with guesses and hopes. What we can rely upon, though, is the quality of the work done by my colleagues in the investor-owned utilities. Why? Because they're paid to get it right, and they generally do. But they're also paid to do well for their businesses. That's their purpose. They're advocates, at the end of the day, for their businesses. The same is true for the green folk that I call green folk, but I'll just say those interested, like all of us, in protecting our environment. They're advocates. They were both at the table in putting this product together. Where were the ratepayers? Why weren't they there? Should have been. Weren't. And that is reflected in the current product. And that's why we see such things in the bill as a single issue rate making piece that applies to all the billions that will be spent on RPS. That's a mistake. Should be fixed. Could still be fixed in the Senate. I hope it is. It won't be. But it should be. There's another issue in here which astounds me that our cities have not stepped up. It astounds me that the cities would give away the power that they have used infrequently to create public utility districts. That power is basically relinquished in this bill. Why did the cities stand by and let that happen? Seems odd. There's a shift in the burden of proof in certain things that are incredibly important to those who know anything about rate making. Why wasn't that discussed in front of us? Why weren't any of these things discussed in the detail they deserved? We can blame the ballot measure or we can blame time, but at the end of the day, this reflects a 25-year commitment to a goal that some of the people we hired and put to work on this kind of thing would suggest is perhaps not the right goal. But 50% are the renewable portfolio standard carries a certain notoriety, and that's why it's being placed in here without much discussion. I think it's incumbent upon those of us that sit on this committee to say and call out the incredible regressive nature of what's going to happen under this bill and the people that actually have to pay more. It's the poor, the folks that are out there that have to actually reach for their wallet and write a check. This bill will harm the very people we're trying to help in other bills in this body this session. Seems odd we didn't hear about that. What we heard instead was this, oh, this is only going to cost 1.5% more. That's incorrect for so many reasons. But at the end of the day, though, the part that bothers me the most is that this bill was put together without the ratepayers being protected. That's bad. And so, can it still be fixed? Could be. Probably won't be. too bad. So I've suggested to a number of folks that something needs to be done to try to fix this. At the least, we would need some high quality insight from those that do this for a living to advise us on how to get it right. Is there time for that? Probably could be, if folks wanted to actually step up and address these issues with the clarity they deserve. So, Madam Chair, I'll be a no. And it is my hope, though, that rather than just talking negatively about this bill, which reflects enormous amounts of work and some very good things, that that folks step up and try to get some of these things fixed. They need to be fixed because they're inconsistent with our normal approach to managing these kinds of very expensive projects. And this, we haven't done a bigger one, really. It's in the billions, right? The billions, quarter of a century commitment. We sure need to get it right. This is not right. Needs more work. I'll be a no.
Thank you. Further discussion. Representative Wagner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just kind of to echo on what Representative Bent said, I actually have a PUD in my district. The city of McMinnville enjoys 30% less on their power bill than people that are outside the city of McMinnville. I have PGE. My brother has the McMinnville PUD, and his power rates are much lower than mine in a much bigger home. So I know the benefits and the value of cities being able to organize the PUDs. There's a lot of issues that are problems with this, and one of the things I enjoyed about being on this committee, and one of the things I'm committed to about being on this committee, is finding ways to use industry and technology to lower people's power rates. So what are some things that we could do to have clean power but make it the cost lower than what it is? I mean, we've seen it with Bonneville and what's happened with the dams and the reliability of them, how long they last and go, and the price of power coming out of is so much less than anything else we have. And here we're eliminating one resource for that low-cost power and putting our eggs essentially in renewables and gas. And I don't trust that. I don't trust that market. We're not putting nuclear on the table. We're not putting other options on the table for that baseload power to actually drive down the rates for ratepayers. And I think it's something that we should be doing as a committee, is trying to find that clean energy, but reducing the cost for our ratepayers, because we have a lot of people that are in poverty in the state, and it's a struggle for them to pay their electric bill each and every month. So I will be a no on this bill as well.
Thank you. Further discussion? Representative Rudin.
Well, I'm a little more enthusiastic about this bill than some of my colleagues, and I think it's really interesting remarks, and I have such great respect for the opinions that I hear up here, and I'm always one that would want more information. But having said that, I don't foresee the addition of hydro in our future, so I don't see that as an option for expanding. I think if option was available, that the investor-owned would probably be getting hold of that, and if that were possible, and we'd all have lower costs. But I don't see us building more dams on the Columbia. So anyway, I'm very much in favor of passing this bill. It raises the bar for the amount of renewables that will be in Oregon's energy mix, and it does so using a balanced process that has been proven to provide excellent predictable results. We're going to have higher standards that remove coal from our mix. The utilities will continue their integrated resource planning process, which has been working. PUC will continue to provide their oversight and their insight. And CUB will continue to play an important role protecting ratepayers, especially those residential ratepayers. This bill goes even further, though. It supports the growth of the electric vehicle market, even into the underserved parts of our service territories. It also supports the growth of the community solar, even bringing that possibility to lower-income customers. There's also an element of added protection with limits on rate increases and a chance to hit a pause button if there's a system reliability issue. Given what we're trying to look for 25 years into the future, those are wise measures. I'm also excited knowing that this bill will lead to more jobs in construction and ongoing maintenance, a lot of that work in eastern Oregon. Not so good for coal trains, but I can live with that. Passing this bill gets Oregon off coal and gets us on a path to 50% renewables by 2040. That's the core of this bill, and that core has remained intact during the hearing and amendment process. That fact reinforces my conviction that we will achieve the higher standards in a period of time that makes this bill meaningful, affordable, and predictable. But I'm realistic. I doubt our work is done. There will be adjustments made in future sessions. Rep. Johnson and I are already talking about small-scale renewables. I need to tweak that. Maybe there'll be more work on demand response or the EV area. We'll see. I've been so very impressed by the experience, knowledge, passion, and professionalism of all involved with this work. I was tempted to try to name all our players, but I'd certainly leave somebody out, and I don't want to do that. So you know who you are. We need to get this bill to the floor, to the Senate, to the governor. It's not only a great bill, but it serves as a wonderful reminder that Oregonians, when faced with a tough issue, can come together. I'm very proud to have played a small role in this, which will be one of the crowning achievements of this session. Thanks to all. I urge and I vote.
Thank you, Representative. Rep. Hart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to say Representative Bentz articulated my thoughts perfectly, and he said it better than I ever could, and for those reasons, let me know.
Thank you. Representative Holby.
And thank you, Madam Chair. And again, on this bill as a whole, I do appreciate all the work that's gone into it. I am just a little bit nervous about it from my standpoint. The negotiations on bringing this bill together, I was always worried about not hearing enough from the Public Utility Commissioner in this process. And if this bill is to move to the Senate, I hope that they get a chance to really weigh in heavily on this going forward. I will be a courtesy yes. I think there's a lot of good things in this bill that we can hope for. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We've heard about process today from various members, and I'll be supporting the bill because I do believe there's been a process involved with this topic, unlike what would happen without that, i.e. the ballot measure would be something that would involve random outcomes. I think few of us could predict the impact to either the reliability of the grid or to the impact of our ratepayers. But as Representative Benz alluded to, this represents a 20 or 25 year plan, and I believe that because there is a plan in place, it can provide stability. And I think our ratepayers and I think our electrical generation grid needs stability so that we can plan, so that we can prepare, and so we can deliver the best product at the lowest cost that we can for ratepayers. So in my mind, this removes some uncertainty that currently reigns within the marketplace and within, frankly, within the political spectrum within Oregon. But it's not perfect. It's not a perfect work. If we had more time, if this was a full session, I think we could make it a better piece of legislation. But we play with the cards as they're dealt to us. There are certainly issues that need to be addressed, and I'm hopeful that some of those may be addressed in the Senate. I know the municipality still has some concerns. Representative Reardon addressed the small-scale renewable issue. He and I have committed to lead an interim work group to get all the stakeholders together to make sure that we can get that situation resolved in a way that makes sense for everybody. It certainly is much more beneficial for my PUDs and my co-ops in my district than the ballot measures would be, and that's not insignificant. But I also think it's important to recognize that there are some in this room who have been banging the drum loud and long that Oregon's got to show leadership on this issue. Well, this is leadership. I'd be hard-pressed to find how we could go beyond what this bill will call for. So I would hope that for those members, for those advocates who continue to advocate for more and more, that this represents an endpoint. This is as far as we can go, putting requirements upon our electrical generation grid. We will be as green as I think as we can responsibly be at the end of the day, and that's not insignificant. So that is this legislator's intent, and I know it's the intent of others who will be voting yes on this bill. So we simply can't impose further cost drivers via a cap and trade or a carbon tax, because that will inflict not insignificant harm upon our ratepayers and upon our economy. So for that reason, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Boone.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, I echo a lot of my colleagues' comments so far, so I won't repeat them. But I am also concerned with some of the folks who did not get their piece into this very complicated bill. And anybody who's worked with me the last 10, 12 years here knows that I would love to have 100% renewables, which would entail bringing hydro into the mix and calling it a renewable, which it is. Having said that, and watching our friends over the pond in the UK, in Scotland, targeting 100% renewables, which they have done and they will meet, I'm enthusiastic, and I hope that we will continue to work on this as it moves through. And for that reason, I will be of enthusiastic courtesy, yes, and holding my powder, as you say, but ever hopeful that we can help bring everybody into this mix with an enthusiastic yes at the end of the day. So.
Thank you, Rep. Helm.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I very much appreciate Representative Bent's comments on this, because I think it points out the difficult political position that we're in. And it's a position that isn't to lay blame at anybody's feet, but having a ballot measure in front of us is a good thing in that it forces action. It's a bad thing when it forces it uncomfortably quickly, and that's the point that I think we're in right now. And I find it admirable that all the parties that worked on this project came together so quickly in the face of what was considered to be a threat to everyone's position. And we have an imperfect product, I think. And I've been one of the people on the committee that has pushed hard on a couple of areas that I think are still imperfect, our community solar component being one of them. And yesterday, though, I concluded that I'd pushed hard enough for now, because when you step back and look at what we might get here, it truly is impressive. And I have some faith that we can work out some of the more difficult details as we go along. I looked back and saw that we were a leader, Oregon was a leader in renewable portfolio standards just a few years ago. It seems like the recent past, but, you know, 8 or so years ago is a long time ago. So much has changed. We've learned more about the climate change and our situation, how dire it seems right now, and how much we have to adapt to the new future in front of us. We've also made huge leaps in our technological capability for managing the grid. And I have to say to PacifiCorp, your work on the energy imbalance market and that technological capability may unlock some great things, not just for our state, but for the entire West Coast. It really is a key, and we did not have that tool a few years ago. And I think that's going to make a lot of difference. So for me, going up to 100,000 feet for a few minutes, this legislation moves in the right direction. It moves in a direction where we start capturing the capabilities of free fuel, not fuel that we have to pull up from thousands of feet underground or dig out of a ditch, but free fuel. And the key is, how do we integrate it into our grid in a safe way? We're moving in that direction all the time. One thing I think became really clear this week, and I would risk stating this from both parties' positions, the federal government's not going to save us. If the president's Clean Power Plan comes to fruition, it's going to be a number of years down the road. And those states that are fighting to save their coal industry, by the time they get to that end, I hope that our state will be 5, 6, maybe 10 years ahead in our capability of moving in a direction that we have freer, cleaner energy. And one of the reasons that I hope that that comes to pass isn't just because it's better for our environment, better impact on climate change, but that our business community benefits by it. We really have an opportunity to boost our renewable energy businesses and our conservation businesses in the state through this bill. We already saw an example of it. We passed out to the House a pilot project to start experimenting with large-scale solar. That's the kind of things we're going to be able to do with this legislation. So let's work out the small details as we move along, and let's continue the collaboration that started here into the future. I will be a yes, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hall. Any further discussion? Before we call the roll, I just wanted to say I appreciate the comments and the very thoughtful comments and work that's gone in from all members of the committee on this bill. I know we've had a lot of discussion on it and a lot of work. You know, I realize, just as all of you, some of the major discussions that we're having this session are because of the potential threat of ballot measures that are happening, and that definitely informs, you know, the work we do and you know, the timeliness of some of the things we're working on. But that being said, this is a concept that was brought up in the 2015 session, and because of the work that went in for all of the parties who are around the table with this, coming to agreement, something that works better, I believe, better than the ballot measure in terms of the right thing for Oregon, taking into the really important components of addressing climate change, addressing coal as part of our energy mix, and getting us to a place where we can say that we are continuing to be a leader in the renewable energy. We're going to be developing, you know, solar programs with the community solar piece, with the companion bill of utility-scale solar that we passed out of the committee earlier this session. You know, we are going in a really good direction with this. I think it's important that this bill goes over to the Senate so that they can have a robust conversation about this policy, and I fully expect them to have their input on what this bill looks like, and I think that there'll be people there who are going to be looking very closely at the community solar pieces as well as some of these other pieces, so that, you know, we're still going to be having that discussion. But where we are right now, I think, is a positive place for the bill. A lot of the big changes that were impacted the parties that were part of the ballot measure, I've tried to reflect those in all the different amendments. The fact that we're up to, I think, like -34 or something for amendments proves that there's been a lot of work on this. And there will be an interim committee, and I appreciate Rep. Johnson and Rep. Reardon's commitment to chairing that, to look at some of the issues like community solar, like some of the EV issues, some of the access issues that we didn't have time to look at here, or were just outside the scope of the work that I wanted to do on the bill in this session. So I appreciate that, and I'm really proud that we're able to take this step for Oregon right now. So with that, let's go ahead and call the roll.
Representative Mintz?
No.
Representative Booth?
Aye.
Representative Hurd?
No.
Representative Held?
Aye.
Representative Holby?
Aye.
Representative Widener?
No.
Vice Chair Johnson?
Yes.
Vice Chair Reardon?
Yes.
Chair Megan Peterson?
Yes. With that, the motion passes. Hold on 1 second. Okay. All right. With that,
need a carrier.
Okay, and I will carry the bill. With that, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 4036. And did you want to say anything about your bill?
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay.
I'll just say just a couple words. We on the schedule today, we had my bill 4034, which took a shot at trying to measure black carbon impacts from catastrophic wildfires. I'm interested in seeing whether I can integrate that concept into Representative Vance's metrics bill. In the end, this ended up to be, even though I tried to make it a very narrow question, and Representative Johnson was of great help in trying to narrow that. We worked together on it. it ended up being too complicated a question to solve in the short session. So it needs more time. No reason to push on it now. We'll get it done, hopefully in the near future.
Thank you, Representative Helm. Anything else for the order? Representative White.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd just like to commend Representative Helm on this because I think it's probably the biggest thing we could do for lowering carbon in the state of Oregon. So, and I've hit on different groups about addressing this issue. I had a bill actually for us to manage the federal forest lands, which is a huge expense for us, but it would help us actually start reducing carbon at a meaningful level in the state and make us a carbon neutral state and probably help other states basically tag on to us for being carbon neutral as well. So I commend him and I encourage him to stay the course on that.
Okay, thank you. With that, closing the meeting of the House Energy and Environment Committee. Thank you. With that, closing the meeting of the House Energy and Environment Committee.